Happy Easter number two. It's a Christos Anesti in Greek. It is Easter for the Eastern Orthodox branch of our faith. It runs on the Julian calendar instead of the Gregorian calendar. So there's about 300 million Christians around the world who are celebrating the resurrection today. I thought just maybe don't tell the kids. They'll want a little more chocolate. I would have found that loophole, definitely, if I was young. So the typical post-Easter sermon is the story called The Road to Emmaus. And it's found at the end of the Gospel of Luke. And it's been a few years since we talked about it, and I thought it might be a good bridge into our next sermon series, where we're going to explore some of the more experiential parts of our faith, things that we sometimes call the gifts of the Spirit, the ways that humans experience God guiding us and how that manifests in our lives. So it's sort of a soft opening to that as we head toward the celebration of the Feast of Pentecost. So this story, it starts on the day of Jesus' resurrection. All right, so on the day that he rose, he appeared to a few folks, including two people who were walking along a road between Jerusalem and a small village called Emmaus, which was located about 7 or 8 miles northwest of Jerusalem. So these two people are heading toward Emmaus, and their names were Cleopas and then an unnamed companion who I think was probably a very good chance that it was his wife Mary, who had been named earlier in the gospel. So Cleopas, and we'll call her maybe Mary. And it was afternoon when these two had set out along this nice Roman road made of stone, and they'd spent the last 2 days hunkered down in Jerusalem with their friends, with the other disciples and a big group of people, and they were all highly unsure about what was going to happen to them. There was a lot of fear about potential political consequences for them, right? Rome had killed their leader, Jesus. They had killed him brutally on a cross in a way that Romans had killed thousands and thousands of people. And so the question for them was, would they be next? Would they come after them? Would some of the plethora of Roman soldiers that had filled the city for the feast time come knocking on their door? So they're walking. They're getting out of the city. They're heading west toward the setting sun, making their way to Emmaus, where they're expected to arrive for dinner. And so as they went along, they were trying to make sense of these reports that had been circulating that morning. So several of their friends had told them that Jesus' tomb was empty, that his burial linens were lying on the ground, that the shroud that had been placed over his face had been rolled up and placed on its own nearby. And then Mary Magdalene, one of Jesus' besties, had reported having seen him in the garden outside of the tomb. So that was weird. And so they did what people do in those kinds of moments. They were debriefing and talking. They were replaying the events of the last several days, trying to piece together some kind of narrative that would help them make sense of what they had just lived through. Now, many of you know I lost my dad about 1.5 years ago. And I think I've probably shared this, but my family got super annoyed with me in the 2 or 3 months right after he died because I just kept randomly saying when I was with them, I was like, do you know my dad died? Like he's dead, like he's gone, like he's really, really dead. And my sisters were just like, oh my gosh, Emily, like will you stop? Like we know, like it's so weird, stop saying that. But I think it was my brain was just trying to make sense of this thing that just couldn't make sense to me, right? The way that our brains are just doing that when there's trauma or loss, especially when it's really significant. Right, so these two people in the story had lost this dear friend in this very traumatic way. They're processing. And then somewhere along their journey, a stranger came along and joined them. Our roads at that time could be dangerous, and so people would come together for safety and travel. So a new person sort of entering the conversation or joining them wouldn't have seemed out of the ordinary. And the stranger asked them what they were discussing. And then they were surprised that he seemed unaware of what had just happened in Jerusalem. And so Luke 24:17, it says, and he said to them, what are you discussing with each other while you walk along? It says, they stood still, looking sad. And I think that little sentence does a lot of work. Right? They just paused and they stood still, looking sad. And they're probably trying to figure out, like, is he punking us? Like, what's going on? It says, then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have taken place in these days? And so they began telling this stranger the story as they understood it. And they told him all about Jesus of Nazareth, and they told him about his teachings and some of the things they'd seen him do, of the hope that they'd placed in him, and how everything seemed to have just fallen apart when he was executed. And they also mentioned this strange report from the women who had gone to the tomb that morning and claimed that it was empty, although it was clear they didn't quite know what to do with that information. But then the stranger did something kind of weird in response, since he started interpreting the scriptures for them. So he started back with Moses and went through the prophets, and he reframed the meta story that they thought that they understood, and then began to show them how these current events might fit in with this larger narrative in a way that they hadn't yet imagined. Now, you may have had this happen to you at different times in your life, like where something is just sort of unlocking something. Because I'm solidly middle-aged, the first example that came to my mind was the movie The Sixth Sense. And I don't think this could possibly be a spoiler since that movie is now 27 years old. But there's a little boy in the movie, and at the end you find out he's been dead the whole time, right? And once you have that piece of information, suddenly a lot of the movie makes sense. And I thought maybe Stranger Things is a better example, right? It's a little bit more up-to-date. Like once you understand what the upside down is, things click a little bit more and the story starts to coalesce. But if you're thinking theology, like some of you, but certainly not all of you, but like some of you, I grew up with certain narratives about why Jesus died. And those narratives never felt quite satisfactory for me. Right? They either said something about God that didn't feel true to my own experience of who God is. You know, like a classic, they'd call it penal substitution. If you don't know what that is, that's completely fine. But it comes across like God killed Jesus because God was just so mad at us humans for being bad that he needed to slaughter something innocent to appease some kind of bloodlust or something. And that just didn't quite resonate with me, with who God was. That felt like a little intense. So another story just kind of makes the crucifixion seem not that relevant, at least like if you were trying to talk about it with friends, it's like, I don't really know what that means. And then when I was in seminary, I read this collection of essays, and one of the essays was about a scholar at Stanford named René Girard and his scapegoat theory and how it applied to Jesus' death. And it was like this major light bulb went off in my head. And I was reading it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to know more. I need to go and read everything that this guy has written and try and figure out, like, this just makes so much sense. And don't worry, I'm not going to unpack the whole scapegoat theory today, but the gist of it was helpful because it told me that God didn't kill Jesus. We humans killed Jesus. And that we did it using a sociological mechanism of scapegoating. And then God overturned our wrong human verdict by raising Jesus from the dead. So in this way of seeing things, God didn't require Jesus to die, but God allowed it if Jesus chose to accept his mission. Right? You see him going, not my will, but yours be done. And accepting that mission would help us better see what this mechanism is. Like one of the major forces of human violence could be unveiled for us, and unveiled for us as being unjust and unhelpful. Right? John calls that the sin of the world, and it plays out in our families, and it plays out in much wider ways. And that understanding this mechanism that causes so much harm and violence would, in fact, like bring us salvation. And that's certainly not the only way to see the cross for you Bible nerds. I also like Christus Victor, but I see Girard's lens as part of like the practical working out of what it means to be Christian. And I felt like this is something I can explain. Right? This has like real world practical help, and it's compelling. And it's a way we can invite people into a way of living that can subvert all of the rivalry that sort of permeates the human existence and experience. And that's what Jesus was teaching and modeling and how he lived and in what he taught. Right? So maybe you've had a similar aha moment. You know, maybe you even feel differently, but I don't care how you feel about the cross. That was just really helpful to me. But maybe you've had a similar moment, maybe not with a faith thing, but maybe with a different set of ideas. Or maybe there's an artist that you used to think was just like really like dumb or boring, but like the older you got, you're like, oh, I get that now. You know, and there's just this little mind shift. And I think that's what was happening with this stranger and these two people on the road. Right? We don't know what was said, but we know that it was something profound and it helped them see everything differently. So they'd spend quite a long time listening to him, maybe even hours, and yet they didn't recognize who was teaching them. And so this is one of the more striking things about the story, right? They were walking along with Jesus, listening to Jesus, being instructed by Jesus, but they didn't know it was Jesus. And it was only later when they reflected back on the experience that they described it by saying, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" I think that's a curious description because it suggests that something was happening inside of them before they understood what was happening around them. Right? So it was sort of an inner awakening that they were having. Like they felt something, but they couldn't yet interpret it. Like they were being led, but they couldn't identify the one who was leading them. And then as they arrived in Emmaus, they invited the stranger to come and to stay with them. It was late. By the norms of hospitality in that time and place, that would have required that kind of invitation. And so the stranger accepted the invite, and they sat down to eat together. And then in a moment that echoes some of the earlier meals that they had shared with Jesus, he took bread, he blessed it, he broke it, and he gave it to them. And it was in that moment that their eyes were opened and they recognized who it was. And then, just as suddenly, it was like, poof, he was gone. And it's a little disorienting in the story how that happened, right? It was like, as soon as they recognized Jesus, they didn't get to continue the conversation. They didn't get a chance to ask questions or receive further teaching or push back. Instead, they were just kind of left with what had already happened. And they began to reinterpret those experiences in light of what they now understood. Right, so they looked back then over the walk and the conversation and over that inner stirring or warmth that they had felt, and then they started to interpret that differently. Right, so it's this movement from having an experience with Jesus, even though they didn't know it was Jesus, to actually seeing who it is, to recognizing him, to reinterpretation of the initial experience. I think that pattern is key to what the Gospel of Luke is trying to show us post-resurrection. Right? It suggests that the way that disciples of Jesus come to know the risen Jesus isn't primarily through this visible interaction, but through a combination of encounter and reflection that unfolds over time. So their awareness of Jesus emerges through memory. And I think this is where the story starts to intersect with some of our own experiences, right? In the gospel accounts, there are a number of resurrection appearances where Jesus is seen and touched in ways that feel concrete and external after the resurrection, right? In John's gospel, Jesus cooks breakfast for his friends on a beach, right? He's cooking this hot, flaky fish and warm bread that's cooking over a campfire, and he eats it with them, and this is tangible. But as the story moves from the Gospels, and like from the Gospel of Luke in particular into the book of Acts, which is the continuation of the story, right? Luke, the Gospel writer of Luke, wrote both Luke and Acts. It's one giant story. It's one big narrative. And so as you move from the actual Gospel book into the book of Acts, these kinds of appearances where Jesus is physically present and tangible, those become much less common. And the experiences that people have of Jesus are increasingly mediated through things like visions, impressions, inner promptings, and what Paul, the apostle, later calls the eyes of the heart, right? So like more mystical sorts of ways of encountering God. So that Road to Emmaus story, it sits right at this transition point at the end of the Gospel of Luke, right? So it's both a resurrection appearance and it's preparing us for a different way of encountering Jesus that doesn't rely on this constant visible presence, but instead it unfolds through ordinary moments that are later recognized as meaningful in ways that we might not have initially perceived. Right? Because most of us aren't walking down a road with Jesus and stopping to have a bite to eat and suddenly realizing that's him sitting across from us at the dinner table. Right? We're living our lives, we're having conversations and making decisions and carrying our griefs and our joys and just trying to like piece things together as best we can. And only later do we often look back and realize that perhaps there was something in the middle of it all, and that it feels like maybe something was guiding us, or maybe something was with us, giving us some sort of signposts. Right? We might notice a conversation that stuck out and stuck with us longer than most, or that word that someone spoke that seemed to kind of open up something in us, like a wondering. Or maybe in a time of distress, we just had like an inner wisdom where we just kind of knew what we had to do. And then when we look back, sometimes much, much later, we find ourselves saying something like those two travelers said, weren't our hearts burning within us? Maybe that was God. Honestly, I mean, this is out of my notes and I'm just speaking off the cuff, but like that's one of the reasons I'm still Christian, is that I feel like there's these moments, these signposts in my life where it feels like, if that wasn't God, I don't know what that was. But it feels real to me, right? And it's a little like what Jacob said in the Jacob's Ladder story that Daniel preached on, right? It says, Jacob woke up from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I didn't know it. And so I think the invitation of this story isn't to like force recognition. It's not to like manufacture some kind of spiritual certainty. The invitation of the story is just to keep walking and to stay attentive and to remain open to the possibility that there's maybe more happening than we currently perceive. That resurrection in Luke's telling is a reality that is waiting to be discovered. That's something that sometimes it comes slowly and quietly, and sometimes it's more in the looking back. And when these two travelers finally understood what had happened, they didn't stay in Emmaus. It says that that very same hour they got up, even though it was late, and they returned to Jerusalem where their friends were still huddled and hiding. Luke 24:33. That same hour they got up and they returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. And they were saying, the companions, the Lord is risen indeed, and he appeared to Simon Peter. And then they, Cleopas and maybe Mary, told what happened on the road and how he'd been made known to them in the breaking of the bread, right? And it was with some urgency that they got up. They were like, we've got to go tell people. And they went back to the very place that felt risky and felt dangerous. And they had the courage to do that because now they were carrying something a little bit different in them. They'd had sort of an opening of their heart, and they carried a reinterpreted story, and they carried a presence. And that's what we're invited to carry as well. So with that, I invite us to have, sometimes we have a little guided meditation or silence. And I think we'll do some silence, but if you would like to, it might be a time, if you'd like to reflect back on some things that maybe felt like, I don't know, maybe there was spirit or something that was guiding you or walking with you in life. Otherwise, we'll just kind of sit in God's presence here. I'll let you know when the time is up. So Lord, I ask over these next few weeks that you would help us to be open to maybe experiencing or learning about ways that the spirit of the resurrected Jesus is alive and at work in our lives. And I ask that your spirit would be present and with us this coming week as we go through our days. And I ask that you would help make us aware to you in different ways, through beauty, through conversations, through things that just feel serendipitous, and that you would teach us how to recognize your spirit and to recognize your ways. In your name we pray, amen.